Good Friday afternoon to you. A beautiful day out there and partly cloudy skies are forecasted for this weekend. I'm Andy Klein, your host for this Friday edition of A Juno Afternoon. And today we're going to be hearing from cellist Zool Bailey about a special program coming up, Sunday fundraising concert. Brent Fisher will be here to talk about fireworks in the parks and a public meeting regarding that. The Southeast Alaska Cornhole Invitational is the subject that Charlie Harrington will be here to talk about. And also, we're going to hear about the Alaska Youth Choir from Amanda Blackoat. That, much more, including Writer's Almanac and Bird Note, all coming up on this Friday afternoon edition of A Juno Afternoon. But first, here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The energy company Enbridge announced Thursday a deferral of the Sandpiper project. Native American advocates have been among groups fighting the proposal to build an oil pipeline across northern Minnesota. Winona LaDuc with the group Honor the Earth is among those in opposition, raising concerns that the pipeline would threaten wild rice, a sacred native food. Supporters of the project hoped it would increase energy independence and create jobs. The company says an affiliate will be withdrawing regulatory applications pending with the Minnesota Public Utilities Commission for the project. Meanwhile, the leader of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe says the tribe expects to hear a court decision next week regarding its effort to stop the Dakota Access Pipeline in North Dakota. In a video message, Chairman Dave Archambault says if it does not rule in the tribe's favor, the tribe will appeal and explore all its legal options. The tribe is also encouraging its members to avoid being arrested, raising safety and financial concerns. Supporters of the tribe are camping near the Cannonball River in opposition of the pipeline, and demonstrations have resulted in a number of arrests. Law enforcement officials say 8 people were arrested this week at a construction site where 2 men were attached to equipment. Among those who've made the trip to Standing Rock are members of Washington Tribes and the president of the National Congress of American Indians. Emily Schwing has more.
Opposition to the North Dakota oil pipeline resonates in the Northwest. In May, Western Washington's Lummi tribe successfully halted a project that would have allowed construction of the world's largest coal export terminal. Swinomish Tribal Chairman Brian Clannisby was among the leadership from 8 Washington state tribes that joined the Standing Rock Sioux this week.
The fact that the Corps of Engineers killed a multi-billion dollar project based on treaty rights really says how far we've come in the last 150 years since we signed our treaties with the U.S. government.
Clannisby also serves as the president of the National Congress of American Indians, the largest representative body of American Indians and Alaska Natives. He advocates for 560 tribal organizations.
It's almost like a sleeping giant has been woken up, and our voices being heard loud and clear for the first time sometimes in our history.
The Sioux argue the Dakota Access Pipeline violates federal laws, threatens water quality and sacred sites. Clannisby doesn't expect the Sioux to back down anytime soon. He plans to join them in North Dakota again next week. For National Native News, I'm Emily Schwing.
President Obama this week granted commutation of sentence to 111 individuals who were convicted of nonviolent drug offenses. As Obama finishes his final months in office, Native American advocates, organizations, and family of Leonard Peltier are asking Obama for clemency. A rally for the long-imprisoned Native man and American Indian Movement member is being held today in Portland. Supporters spoke about the 71-year-old's condition in prison at an event put on by the group The Red Nation this summer in New Mexico. In a video from the rally, his son Chauncey Peltier talked about his father's health.
He's diabetic, he's got diagnosed with an aneurysm, and his health is deteriorating. A lot of people say, yeah, Leonard's did 41 years, but the scientists in reality, he's actually did 60. Confinement and everything, you've actually did 60 years. If Obama don't let Leonard out, these two next candidates don't look too good.
Peltier was convicted of murdering 2 FBI agents in the 1970s. Supporters are calling for his freedom, while others maintain he's guilty and must continue to serve out his sentence. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the 6th annual Striking Eagle Basketball Tournament and Education Fair beginning December 28th. Information on the event and services at siabq.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Weather again today, rest of the day, just partly cloudy skies, supposedly partly sunny tomorrow and tomorrow night, mostly sunny on Sunday, and then the rain is going to close in on Monday. That's how we like it. That's how we like it to be. So take advantage of the sun this weekend as it comes to you. Of course, Monday is Labor Day, so just some rain likely and cloudy there, but good weekend ahead for us. Well, our own Jeff Brown got to speak with cellist Zool Bailey, who's going to be performing this Sunday in a fundraising concert for Juno Jazz and Classics. And let's listen to their conversation next.
I'm on the phone with Zool Bailey, the artistic director for the Sitka Summer Music Festival, and a cellist who's going to be performing this Sunday at Juno Arts and Culture Center at 7 p.m. in a benefit concert for the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. Zool, thank you for being on the air with me today.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
So first of all, tell me about your background. How did you get started playing the cello?
Well, I come from a musical family. I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area in the 1970s, where our local cellist of the National Symphony was Mstislav Rostropovich. The musical scene was very rich. A lot of social activities that went along with that. So my family's activities with their friends and all of my friends were always through music. So at 4 years old, they started me on the cello. They started me on the piano as well. My mother is a pianist, and my father's a clarinetist, and my sister's a violinist. But the cello is what really grabbed me. And a few years later, about age 8 or 9, I decided to put all of my eggs in one basket as a cellist, and decided to focus on that instead of trying to be a pianist and a cellist. So that's kind of, that was basically sums up my childhood. I spent a lot of time practicing, studying all over the place, going to summer festivals during the summer, studying with lots of teachers, and then subsequently went to Peabody Conservatory of Music in Baltimore for my undergraduate degree, which led me to Juilliard for my master's degree. And the transition into professional life was rather seamless because I had been working all along while in school, performing and traveling. So it kind of brings us up to date.
You've been playing for the Sitka Summer Music Festival. What about that festival appeals to you?
Well, it's very funny. I'm actually asked a lot by people, why would I want to spend time in Alaska? And my response is generally, you've never been to Alaska, have you? And every time a person says that to me, that question, they answer, no, they haven't been to Alaska. What appeals to me about Alaska is what Alaska has that no other place on Earth has. And that is just mind-blowing beauty in both people and environment. My trips to Alaska began in the early 2000s and subsequently led me to Sitka as a guest participant under the leadership of Paul Rosenthal. And I, like everyone else, I was spellbound by the world he created musically in such an idyllic place as Sitka, and the fact that he subsequently asked me to carry the torch further in 2011 was a dream, because as I was there as a participant in Alaska, I literally thought to myself, I hope one day I have the blessing to be able to spend time in my life in a place like this and share music with my friends as well.
I'm talking with Zool Bailey, who is performing this Sunday, September 4th at 7 p.m. at the Juno Arts and Culture Center as part of a fundraiser for the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. You're also playing with a violin player and a violist. Can you tell me about your co-musicians, please?
Sure. We're playing a very, very unique program. In the scheme of life, when you look at composers, we all look at them as these kind of giants that sit on top of mountains, but they were human beings just like us, with insecurities just like us. They just happened to have the skills and the mastery of composing to event out an expression unlike others. Beethoven, we always think of Beethoven as possibly being the greatest composer there ever was, but he had the giant of Joseph Haydn in front of him and was very aware that everything he wrote in the string quartet literature would be compared to Haydn, and he had to somehow write something to sharpen his tools to get ready to be compared to or surpass Haydn. And what he did, instead of writing string quartets first, he sharpened his tools on virtuoso string trios. So instead of having two violins, a viola, and a cello, you have a violin, a viola, and a cello. And the writing is just as dense, with more going on in each instrument individually, but he was figuring out ways to wrap these lines together. So in Juno, on Sunday, we're performing the Opus 9s, which were the last three that he wrote of the five that he wrote. In one day, we're going to play this in one concert, and they were considered the peak of achievement, his greatest works to that point in his life. And they're very rarely done, and especially very rarely done, you know, a whole evening of Beethoven string trios like this. So the violinist Kurt Nikkanen, a Finnish violinist who actually lives in New York City, concertmaster of the New York City Ballet, will be joining me, as well as Scott Rawls, a wonderful violist who is a professor at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro, who both of I've worked with for years in different capacities, and we've put this project together and are very proud to bring it to Juno.
What was Beethoven trying to say with the string trios?
I think, you know, he was just trying to get out all of this expression inside of him. I mean, it's glorious melodies, wonderful current in the inner writings of the viola and cello parts, but all the parts are very, very equal, unlike other composers, I think, in before him, where the violin was able to shine mostly. The viola has a magnificent role in these string trios, as does the cello. So it's really an equal partnership of communication between three instruments for these things. So as I said, you know, you could see his evolution in these pieces, which we're going to be playing all in one evening. And you can see now by the end, as the audience will go crazy because they end like a bottle of champagne opening, that he was ready then to go forward with great confidence into the string quartet literature, which, of course, he is the top of the mountain.
Are the pieces difficult to play or challenging?
I think that the more you know, the more difficult they become. We have been playing these for years, individually and together. The lucky part is that we are friends and that we do see music the same way. So there's a lot less discussion than there would be if you had to kind of convince someone of an interpretation or this or that. But they are such great musicians, Kurt and Scott, that as far as ensemble, it's not so hard to put together. But the individual parts clearly have to be mastered behind the scenes, not together, before we get to our rehearsals.
You play from sheet music. What makes one performance different than another performance?
I think that it's kind of like composers vent out how what they're feeling in their own life at the moment. When you have this great music, what changes daily is basically how we change as human beings daily. I'm better tomorrow because of today. And we are actually on a tour of this music right now. We're in Spokane, Washington, and we've been playing them every day. And every day is a little different. Sometimes the faster tempos are a little more subdued. Sometimes the slow tempos are a little more brisk, just depending upon everything from our moods to the weather to kind of the perspective of the day. But it does, all of this great music does something to ignite a sense of adventure, to want to make you return, to try to explore that path again. And so that's what brings me back every day, that's for sure.
I'm talking with Zool Bailey. He was performing along with his friends Kurt McKinnon and Scott Rawls on the viola. Concert starts at 7 p.m. at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Zool, thank you for being on the air with me today.
My pleasure. See you soon.
Smee. Smee.
It's me, sir.
At last and come about.
Avast, sir.
Yes, set a course for Perseverance Theatre. I have found Peter Pan, a girl, mollusks and mermaids. We must make waste.
Haste, sir.
Right away, Smee. Peter and the Starcatcher plays only through September 18th.
Tickets, sir. We'll need tickets.
Get your tickets by calling 463-TIXS. Visit the Jack or ptalaska.org.
Have you heard the story behind the artwork in the foyer of the Walter Sobolev building? Come into the Clan House this first Friday, September 2nd, to listen to an audio play of Allah, the Strongman, depicted in the house front by Chimshin artists David A. and David R. Boxley. Then register to win your own piece of Boxley art in the Sea Alaska Heritage Store. Free admission from 4:30 to 8 p.m. includes access to the gallery and artist demonstrations by Della Cheney and Renee Culp. This message brought to you by the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute and the Sea Alaska Heritage Store.
Over bridge of sights, to rest my eyes in shades of green, under dreaming spires, to Ichiku Park, that's where I've been. What did you do there?
Ichiku Park's not in Juneau, but there are lots of parks in Juneau. We're here to talk about them, and one of the issues that's come up recently, it's just fireworks in the parks. And Brent Fisher is here, who's a superintendent of facilities, parks, and landscape. Brent, so much, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
And Chris Myrtle, who's the chair of the Parks and Rec Advisory Committee, or the PRAC.
The PRAC.
As you said. Hi, Chris. How you doing?
Good afternoon,
thanks
Andy.
Thanks for coming in. So let's talk about it. Fireworks in the parks. So what's happening? We guys, we're holding a public meeting that are taking testimony, that sort of thing. What's going to go on? What's
going to happen? Yeah, so our regular monthly meeting for PRAC is coming upon Tuesday, September 6th, 6 o'clock at the Assembly Chambers. And it's something we've been talking about. The public has come and testified and provided just kind of information. We haven't had official public testimony, but people have kind of been talking that there may be a desire to ban all fireworks from CBJ parklands. So that's, for example, Marine Park, Cope Park, Capitol Park, Savico, Sandy Beach, Sugui. Yep. And there's a lot of parkland that's just undeveloped.
Yeah, and Brent, you were saying there's how many parcels, roughly?
Right. Well, roughly we have over 200 parcels that are actually under the management of Parks and Recreation. And it can be anywhere from a developed park, like many of the parks that Chris just said, but also natural area parks, which are just left to be open, and conservation areas like stream corridors. So we actually manage quite a bit of property in Juneau.
So the issue of fireworks, what are some of the issues surrounding it that people have been talking about or have been kind of bringing in front of the board?
Well, this started probably back in March, where we're just doing finishing up our PRAC meeting, where people get to say whatever's on their mind. And a couple of PRAC members said, hey, I'm hearing a little bit of noise about banning fireworks in the community. And we said, okay, so we talked about it a little bit. A couple months later, we did have a group that just gave an informational, hey, we would like to potentially ban fireworks from CBJ parklands. I think they actually wanted to go a little bit further and across the entire borough, but as PRAC, we can only deal with parks and arc lands. And then two of our PRAC members crafted kind of a very loose general motion. Hasn't officially been read, but what we're going to do is on Tuesday, we're going to open up the floor for public comment. So it's a one-issue meeting, and we're just here to listen.
What are some of the concerns people are raising? I mean, obviously there's noise.
There's noise, sure. You know, well, there's noise, there's safety, dogs are an issue. So there's a whole range of issues from the people that would like to see the banning of fireworks, disturbing of the peace and so forth. But one of the issues is that currently the way ordinances are written, the Juneau Police Department can't really enforce fireworks because you need a possession ordinance, and we don't currently have one of those. So even if PRAC goes forward and puts together a motion and supports the banning of fireworks, all fireworks year-round, on all CBJ parkland, it still needs to go to the assembly. We don't have that authority to make a ban of that nature within PRAC, but it would be a recommendation that would go to the assembly, and if the assembly wants to choose to move on that, they can. But you know, right now we're just here to listen. We of course have heard the other sides of the story saying the whole 4th of July weekend, it's a great social event for the community. You look up and down Gastineau Channel. It's something I don't think you see hardly anywhere else.
Yeah.
So it is a great community event. So there's pros and cons to both sides of the story. I don't know where it's going to go, and we're just going to listen and see what the public has to say.
Brent, is this something that's kind of come up in the past different times before?
I think various times people will set off fireworks, and sometimes it's not early in the evening, but early in the morning. And, you know, we'll hear about it. But this has really come about strongly just recently.
Yeah, so it's and is it surrounding especially the 4th of July or holidays, or
I can't speak for the groups that are either in support or in opposition to it, but I don't know, Andy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what's going to come. As I said, we're here to listen, so I don't have any preformed opinions on this.
Right.
I really want to hear what the community says. And right now, we actually have a poll out there. Parks and Recreation Department, probably about 3 weeks ago now, started with a website called Place Speak. So that's PLACE Speak. And one of the question on it that they have is, should there be a ban of fireworks on CBJ managed parklands? So right now,
do we got the tallies?
I've got.
Okay,
isn't the internet
pulled
and smartphones
up? Yeah.
Wonderful?
There you
isn't
go.
It wonderful? So there's five options for how you can answer. Right now, 31% are saying no, leave it as is, unrestricted use in CBJ parklands. Then there's 20% that say they want a complete ban of fireworks in CBJ parklands. And then we've got roughly 49 people saying, you know, let's see if we can find a hybrid where maybe certain sizes are no longer allowed, or it's during certain times and certain hours.
Now, I grew up in the Northeast, and there were no fireworks. You couldn't get fireworks. And then we'd go on trips south, and that's when, you know,
you'd go to New Hampshire,
south
didn't
of the
you?
Border. Yeah. Well, New Hampshire had them. I guess New Hampshire
had them.
Yeah. So anyway, it's an interesting way, but it brings up the issue of is there any mention of this at all in Alaska statute or in Alaska law of fireworks, that sort of thing?
The only thing that I'm aware of it's an ordinance that talks that's governing parks. So that's, I guess,
it's your area.
My bailiwick.
Yeah.
It talks about missiles and other things like golf balls and those type of things where that prohibits it. But you know, is a firework a missile? So it needs some clarification and some work on that.
Burning schoolhouse is not a missile.
Yeah. So I think this is a good opportunity to hear what the public says. And if we leave it as is, then maybe it's time to clarify that particular ordinance and clarify it exactly what's either allowed in parks.
Now, is the ordinance, obviously you guys are parks and that's what you know about, but is it now legal to set off, if you're just in your backyard, you can set off fireworks? I think
we'll leave that for JPD.
We'll let JPD.
Yeah. Is it just a noise ordinance thing at that point?
Well,
or?
I think that's part of the issue is
it's
that
a little
we
bit
don't.
Of a, there's a little bit of a hole here or something, right? Or it's a little gray area.
I think there's no possession law.
Okay.
And that's one of the issues. And then in terms of the noise ordinance, there's some issues related to that. So there's definitely some gray zones, and I think that's what's causing a lot of the heartache in the community.
Yeah, because I think about like Cope Park, for instance. Well, that's just surrounded by houses, and if you have these big fireworks that can really get altitude and can explode with a lot of ferocity, that's
you gotta come to the valley.
Yeah, right.
I mean, the valley has them quite often in the summertime.
Yeah,
I just heard them twice this week, two in the morning, and some big ones.
And I think that's probably the biggest thing is the discussion is really around the people that are being irresponsible. They're setting it off at 2 a.m. on a Wednesday night. You know, it's
not even in a park, on their right in front of their house.
Yeah,
and
right.
Within a neighborhood. I think, and I can understand that's probably really the catalyst that's driving this. I think that perhaps if there was more responsible use, that probably wouldn't be as big of an issue. But I do know that Juneau is one of the few communities in Alaska that has unrestricted use of fireworks.
Hmm. And other communities probably have these ordinances. Is it because of fire? Is it because of those kinds of things that it's come about? Or
fire is a huge issue, obviously. We're in a rainforest, so forest fires are not a big deal for us. I'm not saying they don't happen.
Right. It feels safer here somehow.
So that's a huge issue, you know, Fairbanks and Anchorage in that area. Safety. You know, a lot of people do get hurt by careless use of fireworks. People can get a little crazy when they're setting off fireworks. The next thing you know, you're shooting Roman candles at each other.
So I
think it's the irresponsible use is probably what's driving a lot of this discussion. But again, we haven't had any official presentations from anyone, but I'm just kind of looking at the tea leaves, and these would make sense that these are concerns. But again, we'll find out next Tuesday really what are the public concerns.
So any other things on the docket for next Tuesday as well? That's it. This is
one issue meeting.
So again, let's go over the nuts and bolts of the meeting itself just to encourage people to get out to it if they're interested in this issue.
So
Tuesday, September 6th, 6 p.m. at City Hall Chambers.
Yeah, in the Assembly
Chambers. They're welcome to actually address the PREC directly in person. For comments. They also can send an email. They can send it to me. I'll forward it on. Brent, B-R-E-N-T, dot Fisher, with a C, F-I-S-C-H-E-R, at juno.org. I'm happy to forward that on to our admin staff and to Chris. The other one that Chris just talked about was PlaySpeak. And PlaySpeak, we have a link off of the juno.org parks web page itself. So it's the second option right underneath special events. So go there, log in, and take a vote there. You're welcome to do that. You're welcome to also come to the PRAC meeting and talk there. So it's
how does that PlaySpeak, just to talk about that for a moment, how is that? Is there a way that you feel like the committee will use that data, or is it just...
No, actually, PlaySpeak, the reason why Parks and Rec utilize this website is it's actually a national website. You log in, you put in your address, but it doesn't go any further than that. It figures out where you are. And then you can set parameters saying, I want to know what's going on, let's say, 25 miles from me, 5 miles from me. So, for example, and this may be something that the community may start using because it's a pretty savvy little website. So, for example, if you say, I live in this location, I want to know what's going on within 25 miles of my home, it'll inform you, say, hey, there's a poll going on right now about firework use in CBJ. Hey, there's a concert going on here. And what it does is it allows you to engage, and you get to really select what level of information you get and how you want to participate. You, of course, can say you want to get involved in polls throughout the entire U.S. if you really have nothing to do.
Yeah, right.
But I think that it may become a tool. I think Parks and Recreation is pretty excited to really get feedback, and especially since they're getting ready to rewrite their master plan or their what used to be called the comp plan, that it's going to be a tool that allows people to get involved. The nice thing about it is it does show where people are voting. It doesn't say, you know, your address. Mm-hmm. It just shows if you vote on a certain topic, you know, your result may have been a blue dot. So you can see, and it kind of gives a geographical representation of how people are voting. So is this a valley issue? Is this a downtown issue? And it's really kind of a really neat tool. So, the fireworks is the first one that we're using on this one. And I would be quite surprised if Parks and Recreation doesn't use this as they move forward. But PlaySpeak is another way you can definitely voice your opinion. Come on down to the Assembly Chambers. I would love to hear what people have to say. You know, definitely we've been hearing mostly from the people who would like to see a ban of fireworks, that they've really been driving the conversation at this point. But I think, as I said three or four times now, we're just here to listen. The PRAC's here to listen and just hear what's going on, ask some questions, become informed. So the options are we may make a motion to ban fireworks year-round in all CBJ parklands. We may come up with something else, or we may take no action. I really don't know where it's going to go.
All right. Well, it's all happening on the 6th. That's the PRAC meeting, which is at the... right in the Assembly Chambers there. Started at what time, 6 o'clock?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock on the 6th, and it's your opportunity to talk for or against or however you want to talk about the use of fireworks in public parks. That's Chris Myrtle, chair of the Park and Rec Advisory Committee, and also Brent Fisher, who's the superintendent of Facilities, Parks, and Landscape. Thanks so much for both of you for coming by.
Thanks, Andy. Have a great
weekend. Very much.
Okay. Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein with you here on this Friday edition. Beautiful Friday out there. Coming up next, we're going to hear from Garrison Keillor and Writer's Almanac, and then we're going to be here talking all about the Southeast Alaska Cornhole Invitational. It's going to be happening out at Marine Park on Sunday, so we'll be talking about that in just a minute right after Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 2nd of September, 2016. It's the birthday of the man who wrote the poem about the gingham dog and the calico cat who side by side on the table sat. That was Eugene Field, born St. Louis, 1850. He became a reporter for the St. Louis Evening Journal, worked for papers in Kansas City and Denver as well, went up to Chicago, worked for the Chicago Daily News, which offered him a column. He called it Sharps and Flats, and he also published light verse, especially for children. One of his early poems was Little Boy Blue, about a group of toys waiting for their owner, a toddler who had died. He wrote Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod one night, sailed off in a wooden shoe, sailed on a river of crystal light into a sea of dew. Where are you going and what do you wish? The old moon asked the three. We have come to fish for the herring fish that live in this beautiful sea. Nets of silver and gold have we, said Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod. 1901, Vice President Teddy Roosevelt came to the Minnesota State Fair, and in a speech before several thousand people, he used the phrase, America must speak softly but carry a big stick. And it's the birthday of a hard luck novelist and journalist, Joseph Roth, born in Ukraine, 1894. He was a journalist after the end of the First World War, covering riots and assassinations, political uprisings all over Europe in the 20s and 30s, living in hotels for years on end, wrote his novels sitting in cafes in between newspaper deadlines. His one big hit novel, 1930, was Job, a retelling of the biblical story, and then set out to write a big ambitious book called The Radetzky March, 1932, a historical novel about the fall of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It came out at a bad time. Hitler had just come to power in Germany. Roth had to flee the country. The Nazis burned his books. He spent his last years in Paris, living in poverty. He was alcoholic, died poor in 1939, unknown. It's only been in the last 10 years that all of his work has been translated into English. Here's a poem for today by Mark Strand. Oh, you can make fun of the splendors of moonlight, but what would the human heart be if it wanted only the dark, wanted nothing on earth but the sea's ink or the rock's black shade? On a summer night, to launch yourself into the silver emptiness of air and look over the pale fields at rest under the sullen stare of the moon, and to linger in the depths of your vision and wonder how in this whiteness what you love is past grief, and how in the long valley of your looking hope grows, and there, under the distant, barely perceptible fire of all the stars, to feel yourself wake into change, as if your change were immense and figured into the heavens' longing, and yet all you want is to rise out of the shade of yourself into the cooling blaze of a summer night when the moon shines and the earth itself is covered and silent in the stoniness of its sleep. A poem by Mark Strand from his new Selected Poems, published by Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for KTOO programming is provided by Arnold Liebelt, candidate for City and Borough of Juneau Assembly. Paid for by Liebelt for Assembly, P.O. Box 240881 Douglas. Steve Ricci, Chair.
All right, welcome back to the studios here. Andy Klein with you, where it's beautiful out and it's supposed to be beautiful the rest of the weekend. Charlie, are you excited?
Very excited.
I mean, right? It's going to be a nice weekend, man. I guess it's been good weather. I've been out of town a little bit, so I've been missing the good weather. But
yeah, little revitalization this end of August.
Yeah, Charlie Harrington's here, who is organizing the Southeast Alaska first annual Southeast Alaska Cornhole Invitational.
Yes.
Let's talk about cornhole. Let's talk about this sport. I was telling you, I was just in Cincinnati a few weeks ago. People in Cincinnati playing cornhole like crazy.
Yeah.
Amazing. So it's the beanbag, it's the...
I'm pretty sure Cincinnati is where the sport was invented, too.
We should have just used the intranets here, the tubes, and we could have found out, but we didn't. But
yeah, well, there's a lot of good players out there, and we hope to recruit them from all over Southeast Alaska. You know, Skagway has a really healthy cornhole league.
It's
every Wednesday night, yeah. There's talks of six teams from Skagway that are going to charter a plane up here.
A plane?
No, they said they had a ride worked out to get here, and then they need to charter a plane to get back, so hopefully that works out.
Okay.
But we've got slots for 64 teams. We've got about 20% of them filled, so there's lots of, cash prize is $1,500, so there's a good chance to win.
So this is going
to
be happening on the 18th.
Sunday, September 18th.
September 18th. And it's so you got a couple weeks here to plan this out, to figure it out. This is after the Brew Fest.
The
day after the Brew Fest. So your day's already clear.
Yeah, you have lots of time to
right?
sleep.
You already know, right?
Wake up well rested.
Yeah,
stagger down.
So this is serious business. There's a $70 fee for a team of two.
For a team of two, so
right?
$35 a person.
Includes a couple of drink tokens. So that's some fun
stuff
there, and then. But like you said, there's a first, second, and third prize. First prize of $1,500, second $1,000, and so second $500, and the third $250. That's serious money.
There's money on the line.
Yeah.
We're approaching this very seriously. You know, we're building all 16 cornhole boards. They're all going to be exactly the same.
Right.
There's going to be no excuses.
But you were saying, like, you kind of think, okay, so you've gotten a number of teams already signed up. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific. You got lots of room for other people to sign up. Almost like 40 more or so teams could sign up at this point.
About 40 slots left.
Which is awesome, and you want to start it like a bracket, like March Madness, right?
Exactly.
64 teams.
We're capping it
going
at 64.
Down. Yep. But let's talk about what hesitations people might have out there. So do people think there might be a ringer out there, right?
Yeah. You know what, though?
I don't think there's
anything
a ringer out
happen.
There.
We're going to do best of three series to start the first couple of rounds, and then later in, it'll be a best of five game series, 221.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy things can happen.
Yeah, I was watching these guys in Cincinnati play, and it was like, wow, they're pretty good. But they miss. The teams, well, they went up and down. You know, they get into a groove for a while, they can hit it, and then they so much.
And there's plus lots of time to practice, too. Yeah. We got 17 days.
There you go.
And it's sunny outside
It's sunny out. Yeah, all you need is a couple of bean bags and a hole in a board, and you can practice. So have you been kind of, have you become a student of the game since you started organizing this a little bit?
Yes and no. Luckily, Mike Winder, the general manager of Alaska Fish and Chips, he's the wizard. He's the real student, and I'm taking his knowledge and applying it.
Okay.
But just helping it. But, you know, I need to be a better player. Unfortunately, I don't think I'll be able to compete.
You're going to have to officiate probably or help you shouldn't be competing.
I think I'll be working the bracket. But, yeah, we're going to have officials and judges, and I think Mike might even wear a silly outfit.
This is a big deal. Like you're taking over Marine Park essentially for the day, right?
Exactly.
And this is, and like you said, there's 64 teams, so you're going to have 16 boards set up. Is that right?
Yeah, the opening round will be split in two.
Right.
So we'll do 32 matchup or 32 teams, 32 teams.
Right.
But the funny part is by 3-4 o'clock, there's only going to be 16 guys 16, playing.
Yeah, right.
So it'll be really, you know, I hope people stick around and watch the championship match, but it's going to be crazy at the beginning, that's for sure.
Right. And the thing that's so cool about this, and I saw this when I was watching it in Ohio, you know, male, female, all, you know, all that stuff. There's no advantage here to any, you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those sports where you can be the biggest, burliest guy or whatever. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It's all about accuracy and technique.
Yeah, having a painter's touch.
Yeah, so I saw there's a couple. I saw, number one, it seemed to me like underhand was the way to go.
Yeah, there seems to be the dainty napkin throw. A lot of people like
that. You know, really?
Hold it by the corner. I'm not a fan.
I think more like slow pitch softball is kind of the way to do it. Yeah,
yeah,
right. And then I also noticed that most of the people who were having a lot of success, they weren't aiming directly at the hole. It was the hit slide and
the
in.
The hit slide.
Yeah, right.
And then some people put a blocker up.
Yeah.
The last time I played, we play every other Friday at Alaska Fish and Chips. And there are some ringers that were out there, too.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah. But don't be scared off, because we ended up beating them at the end.
There you go,
yeah,
see?
You know?
Because, now, what? So tell me about the event itself. Like, so there's the teams and all that stuff, but, like, there's also going to be a bunch of people just watching, friends.
Yeah, it's totally
you got the place roped
friendly.
Off? Is it 21 and over? Is that what's going on?
It is 21 and over inside the playing grounds. However, spectators under 21 can watch around. You can even go up on the seawalk and look down into Marine Park. I think that'll be kind of cool.
Cool, yeah.
We're going to have music, lots of food, a beer tent. Alaskan Brewing will be there as
awesome,
well.
Yeah.
As well as Broken Tooth Brewing coming down from Anchorage for the Brewfest
the day before. All right.
So there will be some things going on. It will be a great spectator-friendly event.
Yeah, that'll be really fun. And so that, to me, see, that's the thing. That's where it's often later on in the competition, that's where the advantage can be gained.
Yes.
As beers may be, you know what I'm saying?
It's a fine line.
There's a fine line.
Yeah, you know,
so it could be,
too much, too little, just
that's,
right.
That's right. So, you know, this is part of the finesse of playing cornhole. Yes.
Absolutely. And I think that people will take themselves seriously with this kind of, you know, $1,500, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, but it's a long day.
Yeah.
And there's a drink token.
Two drink tokens
per person.
Yep.
So there you go. All right, so how do people sign up for it if they want to sign up and they're like, oh my god, I haven't heard about this yet. I definitely got to sign up.
Okay, you register online on Eventbrite. Most people have probably registered for tickets, whatever on that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get there by Googling it or going to our website, alaskafishandchips.com. There's a link right at the top, or you can head to our Facebook page, and the event should be front and center.
All right, cool. And then it's $70 per team.
Per team.
Right. Can people sign up solo and match up later, or you're just taking teams?
You know, we're only taking one name for a team, so technically, you know, you could sign up and then show up with a partner.
Oh, okay.
You know?
All right,
so if you don't have a partner today and you want to reserve your spot now, I would just sign up and then show up with a partner at the event.
All right.
Now, when you do show up, that partner has to finish the whole tournament with you.
Okay,
you can't be trading partners.
I see.
Yep.
I see. It'd be fun if there was one round where you could do a little, where there'd be a,
well, you know,
you
what?
Know
after
team trades or something.
It's single elimination format, so there will be, you know, by the round of 16, there will be a handful of empty courts for people to play around on.
Yeah.
And, you know, fool around with that.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Okay, it's all happening on September 18th, but sign up now. Go to Eventbrite to do that, and it's at the Marine Park. at the whole huge big bus and, area, yeah, and
the,
all that.
I think it's called Marine Park Plaza officially.
Yeah, the Plaza.
The Plaza, yes.
Very nice. And it starts at 10:30 in the morning on the 18th. Right? That's when check-in is, and the event starts at 11.
First round starts at 1, and then, you know, we can't fit all 64 teams in the first round, so the second part of the first round's at noon.
Yeah, so stop by Alaska Fish and Chips, the flight deck there, and check out, if you ask for information there, I'm sure everyone
absolutely
there kind of knows about
it. They know
it
the deal.
Yeah, they know what's going on. All right, it's the Cornhole Invitational. Charlie, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks,
Danny. Sounds like it's going to be a great time.
Yeah, sign up now.
Yeah, do it. All right, coming up next, here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. Sound recordist and photographer Garrett Vinn spent 2 years in the Peace Corps in the mountains of Lesotho. He met a chief who wanted the people to take better care of the wildlife, especially an extraordinary bird. Here's Garrett to describe what the chief did.
The first thing that he was able to do was to prove to the villagers that a bird that lived there called the lammergeier, or bearded vulture, was not a threat to their livestock. This bird is an amazingly big vulture. It has a wingspan of almost 10 feet. So the lammergeier is a species of vulture that basically eats bone marrow. It'll take bones from deceased animals, pick them up, soar with them in the air, drop the bones, and then they splinter open, and then it devours the bones. The people thought that these vultures killed their animals, which they didn't. So the chief built a corral beneath the nesting cliffs near his village, put a bunch of sheep in there, and left them there for a long period of time. And the villagers saw that these sheep went completely unharmed. He then went and removed the sheep, put a bunch of bones in the area, and then the birds started coming and collecting the bones, breaking them, and eating them. And the villagers saw this, and he had taught them a very simple lesson in such a basic way, that this bird was not a threat to them or their livestock.
To see a truly exceptional video about the lammergeier, produced by the BBC, begin at our website, birdnote.org.
And welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, and Amanda Blackgoat has joined us to talk about Alaska Youth Choir. How's it going?
It's going great.
Amanda just ran in.
Yes, it did.
Remember, from the diaphragm, right? Breathing and all
that,
right? This is the proper way of using your breath. Yes.
Yes.
So exciting times for the youth choir. You guys are doing auditions,
yes,
and also a new musical director. So
yeah,
kind of a time of transition.
Yes, we are a little bit in transition, but we are very excited about our new coming year. Our new music director, Rich Moore, he comes with a rich background in choral music and all kinds of music, actually. But we look forward to having this year with him and continuing the great Alaska Youth Choir tradition.
Yeah. I mean, I had a kid in youth choir 10 years ago, or probably more than that now, and I'm sure a lot of folks listening have at one time or another, or at least gone to a concert. It's such a wonderful part of the kind of musical scene here in Juneau.
It is. And, you know, my oldest has been in the Alaska Youth Choir, but now my three youngest are going into it, and so we are going to be full tilt this year.
Yeah, man. So it's such a fun thing because the youth choir ends up, of course, having the concerts and teaching what we think of traditionally as choir, but also a lot of times there ends up being travel opportunities that happen through the choir. There's all kinds of things like that happen.
Yes, and we do a lot of performances throughout the community as well. We do the Governor's Mansion when they have their Christmas, I don't know,
kind of the welcome,
yeah,
cookies. I just always think of the cookies.
The cookies, yes.
But
Alaska Folk Festival, the campus community at UAS in May.
Yeah, right.
So we do quite a few of those. We do hope to travel this coming summer for tour. Right now we are looking at Denver, but some people have thought of other things. So
yeah, sure.
We're hoping to nail that. Yes,
yeah,
we're hoping
to nail that
down. But it's we're busy and yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about the auditions. So what's happening? Is this happening tomorrow?
It is.
Okay.
It is happening tomorrow at Chapel by the Lake. You can call Amy to schedule an audition.
Okay.
At 789-1941. And it's going to be from 9 to noon and then from 1 to 4. And I believe we still have a few spots opened up, so if you can give her a call.
So people should call ahead and make sure that they actually get scheduled for a time to, okay.
But you could probably show up, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, you probably could squeeze in. It doesn't take very long. It takes all of my four kids were pretty much done in about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So probably about five.
Happens? So, I mean, I can imagine this being a nerve-wracking, right?
Oh,
Going in and trying out for choir. But what sort of happens?
No. As Missouri before, they just need to get an idea of the voice.
Right.
What they hear, what they need to work, what they have to work with, I guess, and so that they can place them. A lot of people think of auditions as you're not going to get in, or you know, somebody's going to be denied.
That's what I think of.
Yeah, no, we've never. I don't
chorus
know.
Chorus line, you know that thing.
Yeah, so we've never denied anybody that I know of. So it's more of just hearing what you got and being able to place you where you need to be. So,
and it's a youth choir. What does that kind of classify as? What's the ages?
Typically, we go from 6 to 18.
Okay.
So those are the ages that we
look
at.
Yeah.
There have been a few on the borderline, I think, but it all depends on the kid sometimes. And
right.
So I think that has – but like I said, I've never heard of anybody being denied. So.
Yeah, right. So, and as you said, Missouri is transitioned out. And mm-hmm. Do you tell me just a little bit more about Rich and the background that he has?
A lot of people know Rich more through JDHS.
Sure, yeah.
He's been there for quite some time. And before that, he comes from Texas, and he has, nearly over 20 years of experience in choral. Instruction and directorship, and as well as I know that he had started taking on the orchestra or string instruments not too long ago, and he had explained that wasn't his forte, but he jumped right in, and
right.
Now he's jumping right in with Alaska Youth Choir. So.
Very good, yeah. Well, yeah. And as you said, there's so much that goes on with the youth choir. It's such a cool thing, and really just a terrific activity. I mean, not only does the community kind of benefit from getting to go to concerts and hear mm-hmm. beautiful music, but all the members of the choir benefit as well.
Oh, I really think the kids benefit as well. I mean, that's what it's all about is the kids. They just grow in ways that sometimes you can't really put tangible measures on, and I mean, we can all talk about maturity and confidence, but it's kind of the whole ball of wax. It's all of it integrated. They learn how to stand before an audience. They learned how to compose themselves, how to interact with each other, hear each other. I think that opens them up to their environment, being able to respond accordingly, take in information, and it's a lot of stuff. But I think that it's done with fun. It's done with music. So I think it's ingratiating. It's lovely to see from an audience as a parent as well. So I think that is what, song feeds the soul, I guess. And so I think that's why it's pretty near and dear to my family.
Yeah. To me, it's one of those things, too. Performance, like getting up and performing artistically in front of a group of people can be such a scary idea.
Mm-hmm.
But doing it when you're part of an entire group that's all kind of supporting each other mm-hmm. and having to work as a team is a way of kind of, allowing it to happen in a way that feels really powerful.
Right. And not as scary.
Yeah.
Not as scary. It's like, okay. And then sometimes as a group, sometimes groups grow smaller. And so then they're like, okay, I still have until they are able to perform on their own. And that's, that takes time. And it's not easy. I've never been a public speaking person myself. But, with practice and that kind of support, that I think it comes along a lot better with for kids that have participated in music performances.
Yeah, teaches, as you said, teaches these elements of teamwork, but also your role within that team,
mm-hmm.
and that you have
exactly.
this ability to shine in your own way, and
yeah.
all those kinds of things. I saw that happen definitely when I had a kid in choir and saw that same sort of thing that you were just talking about with yeah. the kids and development. Okay, so once again, tell me just the details for folks that are interested in getting their kids to sign up.
So call Amy Ely. She's at 789-1941. Our auditions are tomorrow at Chapel by the Lake from 9 to noon and 1 to 4. And, you know, even if you just show up, maybe they can squeeze you in. But calling ahead would be good, just so that everything is scheduled. So
yeah, that's always great
yes,
to let them know you're coming.
Everybody's time is valuable. I mean, their time is valuable, your time is valuable. So we try to respect that both ways.
Absolutely. And you get to meet the new musical director. If you haven't met him, as you said, he's been in the community for years and years. But if you haven't met him already, Rich Moore is taking over as the new musical director for Alaska Youth Choir, and get to have kind of a new direction and see kind of all new areas that get
yes,
explored. Yeah,
yes.
So that'll
we'll see how that turns out.
It's great when these kind of institutions, of course, Missouri was wonderful, but these institutions that have been operating for so long and someone new comes in and has a new idea, and those kinds of things can be moments of real great creativity in these
yes.
organizations. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, great. Well, Amanda Blacko, thanks so much for coming in. Really appreciate it. That's Alaska Youth Choir. With auditions tomorrow, 9 to noon, and then again at 1 to 4, call Amy at 789-1941 if you're interested in trying out. Thanks again, Amanda.
Thank you.
Okay. That's it for a Juno Afternoon for today. Thanks to my guests, Zool Bailey. Thanks, Jeff, as well, for the interview of Zool Bailey. Brent Fisher and Chris Myrtle, Charlie Harrington, and Amanda Blackgoat. Thanks to everyone for coming in. Once again, that's Alaska Youth Choir auditions tomorrow. If you're interested in that, you can call Amy at 789-1941. If you're interested in the first annual Southeast Alaska Cornhole Invitational, you can get in touch with Charlie Harrington and find out about that by Googling it and going on Eventbrite and signing up for it. The public testimony on fireworks in the parks is happening September 6th at 6 p.m. at the CBJ Assembly Chambers. Brent Fisher and Chris Myrtle will be there, and Chris Myrtle, chair of the Parks and Rec Advisory Committee, is there to listen to your comments on whether or not there should be parks allowed in the fireworks allowed in the parks here around in Juneau. And once again, Zool Bailey, that is happening as a fundraiser for Jazz and Classics on Sunday. That's coming up here in town. So check that out as well for Juno Jazz and Classics. I'm Andy Klein. Thanks so much for listening. That's it for today's Juno Afternoon. Enjoy the great weather this weekend. It's supposed to be partly sunny and mostly sunny coming up on Saturday and then Sunday, with a 50% chance of rain happening on Labor Day, starting to cloud up and get a little bit more chance of rain as the week then heads into Tuesday and Wednesday, with rain likely on Wednesday. But a great weekend ahead. Enjoy it.